from Hickman High School through Mizzou and leaving Columbia. My years at Missouri are peppered with lasting and great memories. My plan was to major in political science, then get a law degree and then go into the FBI and at some point later in life run for Congress. My first duty was on the FB field at Old Rollins Field, where I was one of 100 plus freshmen out for FB. Freshmen were not eligible for varsity, so we had our own team and coaches, Clay Cooper and John Cadleck. Both became legends associated with Tiger Athletics and the University of Missouri. On the first day of practice, I counted 17 ends, 9 in the right end line and 8 in my left end line. The words uttered to me by my HS coach, Bob Roark, "You might make it," did enter my mind. I quickly noticed that many weighed more than me, a few were faster, but none could catch the ball better than me. Some were better blockers and on defense, as we played both ways. I instinctively knew that while I had many aspects of my game that needed to be improved, that I was going to make it barring a serious injury. I was carrying a heavy academic load, 18 HRS. Majoring in political science. I cannot remember exactly what string I was on initially, but it wasn't first string, and so that is what my goal became. About a third of the way through my father year, I sprained my ankle badly, which slowed me up for a while. But once I got healthy, I did make it to first team, and we played both the Kansas and Iowa ST freshman teams. I believe we beat Iowa State and I caught a TD pass, but we lost to Kansas. During the father season, I lost two of my front teeth to an elbow delivered by senior Larry Plum. Dirtiest player I ever saw. Following FB, I did go out for father basketball. Did not make the team, but did play in a very competitive city league in which I definitely improved my skills. Several years later, in our city league, I played against Norm Stewart and he said that I should have gone on to play basketball. Norm Stewart was the father coach for the Tigers and years later would return as the head coach and Tiger legend. When I was at Hickman, Stewart was my idol in basketball and Harold Burnine All-American end for Missouri my football idol at Mizzou. Stewart was a great basketball and baseball player for the Tigers and Burnine went on to play for the Eagles. Both great role models. After the FB season, coach Don Foro announced his retirement as head FB coach but stayed on as athletic director. He hired a great young coach from the staff of Georgia Tech, Frank Broyles. Broyles put together an extremely gifted staff composed of Jim McKenzie, later head FB coach at Oklahoma, Jerry Claiborne, later head FB coach at Maryland, Virg Dottiniotek and Kentucky, plus Merrill Green, who later became a legendary HS FB coach in Texas. McKenzie and Claiborne had played for Bear Bryant at Kentucky. Both were super coaches and as tough as they come. Claiborne was also Phi Beta Kappa in college and really bright and a talented teacher of the game. He really helped me improve my game on defense. Broyles was a truly great motivator and could coach every phase of the game. We all knew that we had an exceptional head coach. As spring FB began under Broyles, a whole new world unfolded for Missouri FB. His style was exacting, on the move, crisp and demanding drills, intense competition, and we were all graded after each practice. Early on, we had a posted depth chart which I remember ran at least 11 units deep. Our names were all on a circular chip with a hole at the top, and after each practice your chip would be moved up or down the depth chart. Each unit had a different color scrimmage vest indicating which unit they were on, first, second, third, etc. I only remember one player, Merv Johnson, who never moved below the first unit. He was a senior and after graduation went on to a brilliant college coaching career at Arkansas, Missouri, Notre Dame and Oklahoma. There are 20 practices in spring ball and ours were so intense that there were days when 3, 4, 5 guys might quit. It became pretty clear that Coach Broyles was going to find out who really wanted to play college FB at the level necessary to win. On defensive, we ran a 5-man front, ran the belly series on offense, and our kicking game played a big role. We had an outstanding quick kicking game that was used effectively during our upcoming season. At the conclusion of spring ball, we had a very good understanding of how intensely we had to play the game. I was now part of the varsity unit and for the first time got a chance to assess my ability. With those 2 years ahead of me, I could see I needed to be a better blocker, improve my defense, but felt I was still the best receiver. The summer before my sophomore year, I worked for the State Highway Department based in Columbia. It was mostly outdoors work, hot, demanding, but nothing like being a hod carrier in Denver. The older man I worked with was named John Steele and was a prince of a guy. He was approaching retirement but never let up. He was a worthy mentor. I was also playing Ben Johnson baseball on nights and weekends. I had settled on first base and usually batted in the cleanup position. My arm was still the strongest and I had good power and led the league in home runs. I still had hopes of playing for the Cardinals and knew I had the ability to get better and maybe have a shot at getting signed. My biggest fault was I was an impatient hitter. I liked to take my swings. Like hitting those rocks on our gravel road. As fall practice began in 1957, it was another hot August in Missouri. Two a-day practices early in the morning and then mid-afternoon. The intensity level of practices only grew more intense. We scurried from drill to drill, and our coaches did not ignore any mistakes. I really cannot imagine practices that could be much more demanding. Now we were losing more and more players. Coach Rourke was right, some will get hurt, some will flunk out and some will quit. Those that quit easily led the pack. I knew I would never quit. It is different when you play at a university located in your hometown. I could not let down my HS coaches, my classmates and those in town that followed me through my high school career. Our first game was against Vanderbilt on their field. I had made the traveling squad and was a third string end. We were tied at 7-7 late in the game and Coach Broyles put me in hoping that we could produce a pass completion that could win the game. I think Coach Broyles may have intended to redshirt me during my sophomore year, but because I was a good receiver he put me in although no pass made it my way. The first game that I got to really play was against Iowa St on the road. I was sent in on defense and on a drop back pass, my job was to drop back and cover the flat. Their QB dropped back and I covered the flat and intercepted the pass. Now we are on offense and about three plays later, Stubb Clemenson. Our QB threw me a 14-yd pass setting up a TD. Wow. Where have I been? So now we are kicking off and I'm running full speed down the left side. I see two Iowa ST players dropping back joining shoulders and I know I'm their target. As I am approaching them I'm thinking, I just intercepted a pass, then I caught a 14-yd pass and I'm going to run over you guys. When we did collide we all wound up on the running track which encircled the FB field. Blood was running down the right side of my face as I had about a 2-inch gash over my right eye which required several stitches after the game. Coach Broyles gave me a big smile in the locker room after our win and I felt 1-0 tall. My next major playing opportunity was against Oklahoma, the one team I grew up really wanting to beat. OU had been the most dominant FB team in college FB in the decade of the 50s. Bud Wilkinson, who I would later play for in the 60 Hula Bowl, was their legendary coach. Again I went in on defense. The offensive line at OU took huge splits and if you split with them it provided a big space for their quick-hitting split T offense. Our linebackers were supposed to call a special defense that would bring the ends inside of our tackles to force OU to cut down on their splits. If they did, then our linebacker would check us back into our regular defense. So OU comes to the loss with big splits, our linebacker checks us into our special defense and I jump from outside our defensive tackle to his inside and I'm sitting in a big gap knowing that no OU lineman can block me. They did not cut down their split but our linebacker still checks us back to our regular defense. Everybody goes back to their regular position but I stayed in the gap. For three straight plays we repeat this routine and three straight plays they run the halfback right at me and I tackled him three times in a row at the loss. I knew that when facing a stunting defense that oftentimes teams will run the same play several times in a row expecting to catch you in a more favorable stunt. From that game I just remember those three plays. My shining moments against the team I wanted to beat the most. I was gaining the confidence of the coaches and against Kansas St. I was now on the second unit and played the most time to date. My showing was disappointing as I was not making the quick decisions on defense that enabled me to be more effective. Very upset with myself, and it hurt my chances of playing more that season. We did have two great wins among the five as we beat SMU on the road, 7-6, and stopped them on our 1 yard line on three straight plays to win the game. We also beat Colorado on the road 9-7 in an upset in the worst weather during my years at Mizzou. Went from rain to sleet to snow. Boy, it got bitter cold. When we flew back to Columbia, there were several thousand MU students flooding the runway to meet us. It was an emotional moment. When the list of lettermen for the 57 season was posted, I just missed making the list. I was crushed, but more determined than ever to excel. At our FB banquet, Coach Broyles' last words were, "I'll be here as long as you all want me." 3 days later, he was signed by the University of Arkansas to become their new head coach. I was devastated. 56 years later, I would hear from him personally his explanation of his move. Coach Broyles had gone 5-4-1, and his five victories were as many wins as Missouri had achieved in the previous two seasons combined. Now we were searching for a new head coach, and Don Foro selected Coach Dan Devine from Arizona State, who had produced great teams at ASU. Following the FB season and the announcement of a new head coach, I continued to play City League basketball and my skills improved, especially my jump shot accuracy. After basketball season, I had hoped to now play baseball at Mizzou. But we had a new coach and I had to show him my talent in the spring if I hoped to make the starting unit for the upcoming season. Baseball would have to wait until our summer Ben Johnson League play, in which I would be named to the all-star team for our division. After my sophomore year under Coach Broyles, I had decided that I really wanted to coach and changed my major to education. Now FB was becoming my primary focus. Coming out of HS, I knew no one doubted my academic ability in college, but I suspected that my football abilities were still in question. I had to prove the doubters wrong. My hopes for playing baseball for the Tigers were again dashed, as I now had to show another new head coach what my abilities were. Spring FB under Coach Devine was certainly tough, but had a different tone than under Coach Broyles. Coach Devine was a very different personality than Coach Broyles, and his coaching style was definitely different. Coach Al Onofrio was our end coach, and for the remainder of my Tiger career he was the coach that helped me to a whole new level of excellence. Before Coach Broyles left, he had increased my scholarship to include meals at our athletic training dining facility called the Jock House. Mr. Pace was in charge of the facility and would never qualify as a Walmart greeter. Man never smiled. Joining my teammates at mealtime certainly added to the relationship with all of Mizzou's athletes. By the end of spring ball, I was in close competition with George Boucher, a class ahead of me, as the starting left end position. Following spring ball, Coach Devine increased me to a full scholarship, which included room in the dorm. For my last 2 years, I was in Graham Hall with two great teammates, Norris Kelly, a super quick guard from Sedalia 58/59, and in 59/60, Dale Pidcock, our best blocker playing the end position. He was from St. Louis. That summer, 58, I again worked for the State Highway Department with one very memorable experience. I was told to go dump a load of dirt over the side of a pretty steep cliff in an old international dump truck. I backed up to the edge, dumped the load, and now I needed to shift gears to the lowest gear granny to pull forward. Suddenly I had a dilemma. The reverse gear was right next to granny, and once I let out on the clutch I would either move forward or back over the cliff. I was sweating bullets. No one around to help. I eventually worked up my courage, opened my door in case I needed to jump out if we backed up, and slowly released the clutch. Thank God I moved forward. Dramatic moment at the highway department. Starting my junior year in FB would answer the question of who would emerge as the starting left end. Devine ran an unbalanced line, and to the left of center was the left guard and myself. On defense we ran the wide tackle six. Early in the playing season, George Boucher would start the game, although I would wind up playing the majority of the game and I soon became the starting left end. The most memorable game that season was against Colorado at home. Colorado was very talented and led us 9-0 with a minute to go in the third QT. In the next 12 minutes we scored 5 TDs and 133-9. I scored the first TD on a pass from Phil Snowden. We kicked off and I recovered a fumble and we scored again. We kicked off, stopped them, they punted and Fred Brothersart ran their punt back for a TD. Two more TDs and the rout was over. Another great win was at Nebraska where we beat them 31-0. This was and may still be the biggest home shutout of Nebraska at home. In fact, Missouri is the only team to shut out Nebraska 4 years in a row, 58, 59, 60 and 61. In that 58 game I made the greatest catch in my life as Bob Haas threw me a 29-yard pass which I caught in a headlong dive into the end zone. Picture of this catch was captured by the Kansas City Times in a three-shot sequence which is framed and I'm told hangs somewhere in the press box at Faurot Field in Columbia. However, in this game I dropped the one pass in my career. It was a pass so easy I could have caught it at age 4. Haas rolled out and I was wide open on the 5-yard line. He had a really strong arm and I expected him to zip it to me, instead he threw me the easiest floater that hit me right in the hands, waist high. I made the mistake of glancing to the left to see how close to the end zone I was and as a result I must have juggled that ball 6 times before it hit the ground. Damn. Fortunately we scored soon after. At the end of that 5-4-1 season I was named honorable mention to the All-Conference team. This was our second 5-4-1 seasons in a row but you could see we were getting better. I had proven that I could play and start but now I felt I could really excel come my senior season. In the off-season my junior year I continued to play basketball in our city league, the Hullen Lakers. We were a very talented team and we even played against the state prison team inside the prison in Jeff City, so bring experience when all those doors keep slamming shut behind you. We won. During the game the prisoners would shout, "Don't score more than 85 points, or 76 points, etc. as they had bet cigarettes on the final score. Now it is spring ball time in 1959. I was now the first team left end and leading receiver. My blocking and defensive skills significantly improved and in the final spring game I was selected as the outstanding player by the coaches. The most memorable play was at midfield and I was on defense, rushing the QB on a pass play. When he released the pass I was within a step, intercepted the pass and ran 50 yards for a TD. After spring ball, Coach Devine met with each player. In my meeting he expressed that I had to keep playing well as Gordon Smith might beat me out. Smith was an excellent player who Devine had brought with him from Arizona St. I responded to Coach Devine, "No he won't." And left his office. That summer, 59, I again worked for the State Highway Department. But this summer with the surveying crew who were plotting Interstate 70 through Columbia. We were among the early interstate links being built in America. Very enjoyable summer job. But before my summer job started I had seen a picture in the Columbia Tribune of a beautiful Hickman QB Peggy Fisher being photographed facing a full-length mirror. Have that pictured framed. She had just graduated from HHS and was enrolled to go to the Christian College in Columbia, which was an all-girls 2-year college. Columbia had two outstanding all-girls colleges, Stevens and Christian, both 2-year schools. When I saw that picture it captivated me in a far different way than ever before. I knew that I needed to see if I could land a date with her. She lived with her Aunt Sadie and Uncle Ed Laster who raised her from age 5 after her father died on the farm in 10. Peg was the 12th of 13 kids and Sadie and Ed never had kids of their own and raised Peg as if she was their own. They lived on Washington right behind the FB field at Hickman. Sadie was extremely concerned about Peg dating an older FB player and we spent our early time swinging on their front porch swing. When our first official date took place it was at one of my Ben Johnson baseball games in Mexico, MO, and my dad had to accompany us for Sadie to let her attend. In my first time at bat, I did a bit of Babe Ruth hot-dogging and pointed my bat at the center field fence. I then hit the greatest home run in my life. Dead center field, 400 plus. After I returned to our dugout, an elderly man approached me and said in all of his years watching baseball played in that park, he had never seen a home run of that magnitude. Peg told me later that after the Babe Ruth imitation followed by the towering home run, my dad just shook his head. She has claimed ever since that home run made no impact on her. No way. My second at bat, another towering home run to right center field. Mission accomplished. How's that for a first date? As I spent more time on the front porch swing and eventually getting Sadie to allow us to go to the movies, I felt that I had met the perfect girl in my life. The monies I was earning during my summer job were now dedicated for a new diamond engagement ring. I cannot remember the exact circumstances of the proposal and unveiling of the ring, but Peg agreed. Now she was beginning her father year at Christian and I was beginning my senior year at Missouri. We generally thought that we would get married sometime after I graduated in 1960. The upcoming FB season would dramatically change our lives. My senior year, 1959-60, is where all of the years of three spring balls and three fall seasons finally came together. In the previous spring practice, Coach Onofrio had all of the ends come out 15 minutes ahead of the team practice to work only on blocking. It really paid off. It was a season that led us to the Orange Bowl against Georgia and Fran Tarkenton. On the first day of practice, Coach Devine had us all run a mile together to see what kind of shape we were in. I led the entire mile and in the last 50 yards was challenged by halfback, Roger McCoy, from Centralia, but I held the lead to finish first. Roger and I had faced each other in the quarter mile in HS and he beat me. This time it was different. Roger was one of the nine seniors still playing from our freshman class. As the season unfolded, I was able to make a key contribution in most every game. We opened against Penn State at home, the biggest players we ever faced. Rip Engel was head coach and Joe Paterno was an assistant coach. Right before halftime, I dislocated my middle finger on my left hand as I deflected a pass and prevented it from being intercepted. At halftime, Dr. Baker was going to inject it to numb the pain and tape it to the adjoining finger to form a splint. The team had exited our locker room and I'm sitting on the table awaiting the injection. Dr. Baker was about 6 feet 4 inches and had the hands and touch of a blacksmith. As he injected the joint of my middle finger, the juice squirted out the other side of my finger joint. Went clean through. Bottom dropped out of my stomach for a short period before joining the team on the field. We lost 19-8 and I scored a TD and 2-point play. Some of the personal and team highlights of that season was beating Michigan at Michigan with 2 seconds left on the clock. In that game I was thrown a pass that was about to be intercepted, but I was able to get an equal share of the ball and hung on for dear life. A tied catch goes to the offense. We were now on offense and Mel West soon went 50 plus yards for a TD. A pie of that play is among those I have among my keepers. Blocked a punt against SMU on the road for our only 2 points. The great Don Meredith was their QB. Best throwing QB I ever faced. We beat the favored Air Force Academy at home in a regionally televised game. They were really cocky. A key play in that game was a double reverse pass designed to be thrown to me by Donnie Smith, who was left-handed. The play started with the handoff to Mel West sweeping right, he then handed off to Donnie coming left and I was in the end zone wide open. I quickly ascertained by the way Donnie was carrying the ball that he wasn't going to throw it. I could see that two Air Force players had a good pursuit angle on Donnie and he wasn't going to score unless I could somehow block them. I peeled back and they were running side by side about 5 yards from making the tackle. I dove headlong in front of both of them, wiping both out and enabling Donnie to score. That put us up 13-0 and winning the game. The first televised FB win for Missouri in their history. It was in this game that Coach Onofrio sprung his new defensive scheme. After our opening KO to Air Force, they picked up 3 quick first downs. They were now at midfield and Rich Mayo was their QB and a good one. Then we tried our new defense. It would call for both ends Dan LaRose and me to come hard toward the QB and our defensive tackles would hit and move to the outside to protect any play going wide. On the next snap Mayo dropped back and I nailed him before he could even set up. From that play on we totally shut down Air Force and after the game Mayo said that ours was the best end rush he had ever faced. I received the Schick Razor Award as the game's MVP. Up until that game the previous MVP winners all got a watch. But the NCAA stepped in and stopped that so what I got was a telegram of congratulations from Schick headquarters and saying, whenever I was in New York, to please stop by. We then referred to the Schick Award as the SH Award. Over the years I had several longtime Tiger fans tell me that was the best downfield block they had ever seen. I was in the right place at a key time and acted instinctively once I sensed Donnie wasn't going to throw the ball. At year's end, Donnie Smith beat me by 1 TD for the most TDs scored that season. I never let him forget that play. Throughout the season I never had a bad game. It seemed I was in the movie Star Wars and the Force was with me. Colorado beat us 23-21 at their place due to a terrible pass interference call against us that led to their winning TD. We beat Nebraska 9-0 at home and this was our second straight shutout of the Cornhuskers. In fact, Missouri is the only school in Nebraska FB history to shut them out 4 years in a row 58, 59, 60 and 61 at Iowa St. We won 13-0 and Coach Devine presented me with the game ball. I had caught a TD pass and had a great day on defense stopping their All-American, tailback Dwight Nichols. When we returned to Columbia, MO. Baseball coach, John High Simmons asked me, what was the controversy about my TD? He had listened to the game on radio. I said, Coach, I didn't know there was any controversy as my foot came down about 2 feet from the end line and my second step was out of the end zone but in college we only needed 1 foot to come down in bounds. Coach Simmons was not only a tremendous coach he was genuinely funny as they come. His response to me was, hell, all you have to do is catch it in the end zone, you don't have to hatch it. We beat Nebraska and Kansas St., lost to Oklahoma which set us up against Kansas at KU and whoever won, went to the Orange Bowl. As I sat in the locker room waiting to take the field, I looked around at my teammates and the tears started rolling down my cheeks. It hit me, that if we didn't win this would be my last game as a Tiger and with those of us who survived. We had 9 seniors still playing out of a 100 father everything Coach Rourke predicted came true, some will flunk out, some will get hurt. Some will quit, you might make it. Kansas was good. They had John Hadland, Curtis McClinton, both of whom had great pro careers. We led 13-7 and had them deep in their territory with about 3/4 minutes to go. Then KU broke loose on a freak play all the way to our 9-yard line. On their fir.st 2 carries that drove to our 5 and it was now 3rd and 5 to go. They ran McClinton off tackle right at me. The end across from me was John Peppercorn who was also all Big 8 after the season. I hit Peppercorn with all I had, forced him into their backfield, then hit McClinton head on. My helmet hit the ball knocking it backwards into the hands of their trailing halfback. Bob Haas, a great defensive back came up quickly on the outside and tackled their ball carrier back on the 9-yard line. I asked Haas what would have happened if that play had been a pass play and he readily replied, we'd been screwed. Coach Onofrio told me several years later that he used my defensive play on film as an example to other ends, of correct end play in our goal line defense. Now it was 4th and 9 yards and the Orange Bowl at stake. Kansas made a gutsy call, a middle screen. The defensive call for me was to drop back and cover the flat if the QB dropped back. He did, and I did. I'm in the flat and I see the middle screen developing. I'm coming up, protecting the outside as the runner is closing in on our end zone and winning TD. Dale Pidcock, my roommate, and opposite defensive end got a strong hand on the lead foot of the ball carrier and he is now falling toward the chalk line. DB Ron Toman came up and stopped the runner's momentum at our 1-foot line. We took over on offense on the 1 foot line and ran three plays to eat up the clock. Coach Devine then opted to take a deliberate safety now 13-9 to eat up more clock. And then get a free kick from our 20 instead from deep within our own end zone under pressure. We kicked away and as the closing seconds ticked off we won the game and the Orange Bowl bid. It was Mizzou's first bowl game in a decade and we were ecstatic. It was a most enjoyable trip back to Columbia. Soon after the season the All-Conference team was selected by the Associated Press, UPI, and one selected by the coaches published by the Omaha World Herald and I was named to the first team of all along with teammates Mike Magic and Tom Swanee. Later at the Orange Bowl I got a knock on the door and a member of the Omaha World Herald handed me my All-Big 8 conference ring and he told me that I was the only player selected that was the unanimous choice of the coaches. Wow, I thought what an honor. Later in his sports column in the Columbia Daily Tribune, columnist J.P. Hamill pointed out that I was the only unanimous choice of the Big 8 coaches for All-Conference. Considering the great players that season in the Big 8, Prentice Scott of Oklahoma, Dwight Nichols of Iowa State, my teammate Mike Magic, Curtis McClinton, and John Hadle of KU, Bobby Boyd of Oklahoma to name a few of the best in our conference it was recognition from the coaches, not the sports writers that meant the most to me. I also received honorable mention for the All-American team. Several years after that season, Coach Roark at Hickman was asked if he had ever produced an All-American. He replied, Russ Sloan was the closest I had. A few years after that another QP, John Mosley, a walk-on at Mizzou made third team All-American in his senior year as a defensive back. He was small but quick, smart and tenacious. Next, the Orange Bowl and marriage. During my college years I would often see where the married players on their teams got to take their wives with them at no cost. Peg and I discussed this possibility and decided that if Coach Devine would approve then we'd do it. So I approached Coach Devine and after I told him what I wanted to do, he thought for a minute and then said, well, just do it as soon as you can getting married. So we put our wedding together in 4 days. We got married on a Friday evening 7 p.m. at Wilkes Boulevard Methodist Church Peg's church and my best man was my Tiger End teammate, Dale Pidcock, accompanied by my best HS buddy Tom Watson and my closest college teammate, Tiger QB, and starting DEF back, Bob Haas. Peg's minister, Rev. Longstreth and my minister Rev. Nidenthal from St. Andrew's Lutheran Church which my parents helped to create jointly conducted our wedding vows. The church was packed with my teammates and our friends and family. My mom and dad did not want me to get married too young but Peg's aunt and uncle seemed fine. Our honeymoon was very brief as I had FB practice the next morning at 8 a.m. Jim and Betty Baldwin, a married couple from Peg's class let us spend the night in their home. The next morning I arrived for practice and none of my teammates had gotten into their practice gear. Got a standing ovation from the team, we then dressed and went through our practice. At the end of practice, Coach Devine lined us up for sprints, looked at me and said, Russ, you don't have to run. The coaches and team gave us a silver tea service and tray. Very special. We practiced outside in Columbia that December getting ready for the Orange Bowl. I have a photo of our starting line taken after practice which happened the only line in Tiger history in which every starter was named All-CONF before they graduated. In the picture from left to right was, Dan LaRose, Mike Magic, Bucky Wagoner, Rockne Calhoun, Tom Swanee, Paul Henley and myself. Coach Onofrio signed one of the pies. Since we played both ways, offense and defense this pie captured our offensive line. Coach Doug Weaver was our line coach and Coach Onofrio our end coach. Both were great coaches and did get the best from us. Sometime in December, I got the invitation to also play in the Hula Bowl in Honolulu the week after the Orange Bowl. My teammate Mike Magic was also invited and our Western College All-Stars coach was the Oklahoma legend, Bud Wilkinson. Coach Devine had designed a surprise for our opponent, Georgia, and he used me as a split wide out to the left and brought our other end, LaRose to become a tight end. We had never shown this before. I believe we flew out of St. Louis on Christmas Day headed to Miami. Once there we stayed in the Ivanhoe Hotel on Miami Beach. We were giddy with excitement. Fully clothed, many of us waded into the ocean up to our knees. We held 2-a-day practices during the week, but our evening activities included seeing a Jale game, and Jose Greco and his dancing group. He was a very famous Spanish dancer. A lot of heel stomping and castanets. Not exactly readily seen in the Missouri. Having Peg along certainly made the week more enjoyable, but with 2-a-day's practices we did not get to spend that much time together. Georgia was coached by Wally Butts and they had a very good team with Fran Tarkenton as their QB. He later would become a very famous pro QB with the Minnesota Vikings. We statistically outplayed Georgia that day but lost 14-0. Our new offense did surprise Georgia and I was consistently wide open downfield and caught 7 passes, although one was called back due to a penalty. On one pass I was tripped up on the 11-yard line heading for a TD. Georgia def. Back, Charlie Britt caught my left foot just enough to bring me down. Tarkenton was the difference. I well remember the defensive play in which Tarkenton had dropped back and I was coming up hard on his blind side. As I was approaching him, I thought, if I take one more step I may jar him loose from the FB as opposed to lunging at him for the tackle. Just as I took that step to possibly strip him of the ball, he suddenly spun away from me, rolled to his right and threw a TD pass. Somehow we had lost containment to his right side, which afforded him the space and time to get rid of the ball. I swear he never saw me coming but had great pocket presence as to the line rush. His whole pro career was marked by that same uncanny pocket presence and a scrambling QB of considerable accomplishment. Statistically we outplayed Georgia, but the score did not reflect that. My 6 net receptions would become a Mizzou Bowl game record that stood for 43 years. In the Miami Herald the next day we had considerable game coverage. In talking about Missouri, the Georgia coach noted that Sloan was as tough a monkey as we ever faced. Shortly after the end of the game I got word that the great retired head coach of Army Earl Red Blake wanted me to come see him in his hotel. Coach Blake was now a scout for the Redskins and offered me a contract to sign with them. His offer was a $300 signing bonus. Laughable by today's standards. But I had been drafted by the LA Chargers, who then traded me to the New York Titans, now Jets. Their offer was a $500 bonus and a contract for $9,500. This was the first year of the AFL and therefore the draft in that first year was for an entire team, both offense and defense. I was the 17th pick for the entire new team. After I left Coach Blake and returned to our hotel for the last night in Miami. About 2 a.m. I woke up with a lot of pain in my left shoulder/sternum area. It came from making a jumping catch and landing on my left shoulder, which partially separated my clavicle from my sternum. Our trainer, Fred Wappel, came to our room but don't remember what he gave me to get me back to sleep. The next morning Magic and I were scheduled to fly out of Miami to Hawaii. We flew to Chicago, then to LA and finally to Honolulu. In Chicago, head coach Vince Lombardi met us at the airport as the Packers had a great interest in Magic. He wound up playing for the 49ers and was one of the greatest linemen in Tiger history. When we got into LA we stayed the night before we all flew to Hawaii as a team. That night I took Magic to visit my uncle Andre Bainey, who I had not seen since 1945. He was not in good health, but we had an enjoyable evening. When we arrived in Hawaii, it was an assemblage of most of the top talent in college FB, including the Heisman winner, Billy Cannon from LSU. Paul Dietzel from LSU was the coach for the East All-Stars. Thankfully we worked out in shorts and t-shirts, allowing my shoulder to heal up enough to play. It was still tender but I could play. I was an offensive tight end. And caught 123-yard pass from Don Meredith of SMU, who went on to a great career with the Dallas Cowboys. I had one other pass thrown my way in the flat, but it was broken up by Dean Look, an All-American from Michigan St. We lost and the game 34-8 and it wasn't real close. Part of our problem was that being the West All-Stars, we had to play several linemen from Hawaii who were not as skilled as the East All-Star linemen. Richie Lucas from Penn State was the most outstanding back who we faced in our opener at Missouri, and the outstanding lineman was Larry Grantham, who would later become my teammate with the Titans/Jets and also be on the Jets Super Bowl team along with Joe Namath. Great, great player. One of the week's highlights was taking a guided boat tour of Pearl Harbor. This was before the monument was built. Very sobering to be in a boat directly over the sunken battleship, the Arizona. The big shock of the trip came about when I learned that the married players in the game got to bring their wives in lieu of the $100 expense monies the single players received. I did not know this, because when I got the initial invitation I was single and unaware of the married player option. I made a huge mistake of telling Peggy that as she was home in Missouri, freezing. Should have taken that to my grave. Also, the game gave me one of those moments of humility. After the game in the parking lot awaiting the team bus, there were hundreds of young Hawaiian kids wanting autographs. I'm signing more autographs in 4 minutes than I signed in 4 years at Missouri. Billy Cannon, the Heisman winner, was about 10 yards from me. One Hawaiian boy, around 13, handed me a game program to sign. I did signing it, Russ Sloan, University of Missouri. When he got it back, he got a pained look on his face and blurted out, "Russ Sloan, where's Billy Cannon?" And off he went. Yep, from feeling big time to just another player. From the mountain top to the valley floor. We flew home that night. Prop plane, think it took 8 hours to reach Lane. Cannon celebrated a little too much and was passed out in one of the restrooms. When Magic and I got back to Columbia, we both were looking at our opportunity to go on to pro football. Not sure when, but after the Hula Bowl I ran into the St. Louis Cardinal scout in the hallway between the AD's office and that of High Simmons. He offers me a contract with the Cardinals and a $500 signing bonus. I was pleasantly surprised, as here was my boyhood dream of possibly playing for my beloved Cardinals, and I would turn it down. I realized that there is no minor league to wade through in Pro FB, and the bonus was the same. Plus, having played with many of the best in college FB players in the Hula Bowl, I had great confidence that I would make the pros. My hopes of playing baseball that spring were dashed by the NCAA, who ruled all of us who played in the Hula Bowl as now being professionals because we got a $100 and ineligible to play in any further collegiate competition. This only occurred for that year. It did not exist before the 60 game and was withdrawn before the 61 Hula Bowl. In the 60 All-Star Games, the two most prestigious games to play in was the East/West Shrine Game and the Hula Bowl. I looked forward to the Pro FB season but dismayed that I would ever be in a position to turn down, even a modest offer, to play for my Cardinals. Probably the greatest honor I had at Missouri was playing FB with the first two black FB players, Nora Stevenson from St. Louis and Mel West from Jeff City. I had played against West during my senior year at Hickman and he was a year behind me. Stevenson was a sprinter in track and our fastest player. West was not overly fast but was extremely solid and hard to bring down. I remember playing Nebraska and Mel got hit 6 times between the 10-yard line and the end zone but scored. Stevenson's greatest day was against Oklahoma the year after I played when he broke loose for 2 long TD runs to beat O.U. on their field 41-19. Huge win. Both Norris and Mel were great student athletes and I had the sense that, as a team, we were very protective as to how they were treated. The only ugly incident that I remember was when we played Texas A&M in College Station. The hotel would serve the entire team in a dining area somewhere in the hotel but would not serve our black players in the public restaurant on the ground level. When we learned of this, we all walked out. Players during my era almost never spoke to the other team. The one comment I heard in 4 years came from a K-State LB after I made a leaping catch and after he tackled me he said, "Nice catch." No taunting or disrespect of any kind. During my 4 years at Missouri I was exposed to 4 Hoff coaches, Don Foro, Frank Broyles, Jerry Claiborne and Dan Devine. Al Onofrio was a huge coaching asset to my improvement, success and honors. Fred Whopple was our trainer and the best ever. Dusty Rhodes was our equipment manager and his son Gene was in my class at Hickman. Among the great assistant coaches I had, not already mentioned, were Harry Smith, Doug Weaver, and Tom Fletcher. The success I enjoyed my senior year was probably unexpected. Dan LaRose, our right end, had been selected as all-conference his sophomore year, my junior year. So going into the 1159 season, LaRose was an all-CONT selection while I was an honorable mention selection. The preseason hype was rightfully geared toward LaRose, which made it a lot tougher to achieve all-CONF from a teammate who had earned that honor the year previously. It was not a personal contest, as winning the game far superseded any personal ambitions. My playing days at Mizzou were over, but I would continue to be a student assistant coach that spring and during grad school. Because I had changed my major from political science to physical education, because I wanted to coach, I was a few hours short of graduating in 60, but would get my degree at mid-year in 61 and my master's in 63 in secondary school administration. The summer was approaching and my entry into the professional ranks. Peggy was working at MFA tipping all day long. She had been the fastest typist at HHS and was outstanding. While at MFA, we learned that we had a baby on the way in mid-Sept. At that time, no pregnant woman could work at MFA past 5 months. So when I left for training camp in Durham, New Hampshire, she was staying with Aunt Sadie and Ed. Our finances were tight as I had not as yet received my $500 bonus money and Peg could not work. Next step, pro camp. I arrived in camp and the legendary pro QB, Sammy Bow, was our head coach, and my end coach was Two Bones Two Taylor, who had played for the Redskins and could tell the funniest jokes. While I played at Missouri at 189 pounds, I had gotten up to 205 and was playing tight end. Early on, I could see I was the best receiver and could tell the coaches liked what they saw. Players were coming and going like crazy. New team, new league, and the turnover in talent was never ending. Our wide receiver was Don Maynard, slightly built, great speed and good hands. He would become an NFL Hall of Fame member after his career and Super Bowl victory. Larry Grantham, who I played against in the Hula Bowl, was an outside LB and outstanding. In the second week of camp, in a night practice, I had the safety beat on a deep post pattern and was at top speed and over striding to make the catch. Suddenly my right hamstring snapped like a firecracker and they heard it snap about 50 yards away. I immediately went to the ground. I was out for several days, would return and pulled it again. Never having a pulled muscle, especially a hamstring, I had no idea of how difficult it was for a hamstring to heal. But I had done well enough to make the team for our preseason games. I was held out of one game due to the third hamstring pull, but played in the second, third and fourth. In the second or third game, I owed a TD pass, which may have been the first or second TD pass in the history of Titan/Jet FB. Preseason. I was now very aware of how fast I could run or how much stress I might put on my right leg. We played in Wichita Falls, Texas, Oakland, CA, Los Angeles, and Birmingham, ALA. I had already had the PR photos taken for the regular season, and had discussions as to living in New York during the season. Finally received the $500 bonus and we were paid $100 per game until the season started and my $9,500 contract kicked in. In the fourth game, I could not make some of the plays I would normally make. I had seen so many players cut from the team during camp and preseason that I became concerned that they would not risk keeping me going into the regular season having pulled my hamstring three times and still not at full speed. I had to play hurt and simply hope for the best. I guessed right and was released, even though I had received praise for my play on several occasions. I understood the reality of life and pro ball. They needed a healthy tight end, not one with potential and three hamstring pulls. It was a bitter, bitter disappointment, as I now knew for certain that I could effectively play at that level. I flew home to Colombia and to Peg, who was now less than a month away from delivering our first child. I enrolled at Mizzou to finish my undergraduate degree and also start my master's degree. The Mizzou coaches helped on my expenses as an assistant father coach. I loved coaching and found it to be a very consuming profession. On September 18, our first boy was born, Douglas Taft Sloan. Douglas after General MacArthur and Taft after the Ohio Senator Robert A. Taft, known as Mr. Conservative within the Republican Party. He was 8 pounds and 12 ounces and arrived 9 months and 14 days after our marriage, which fell short of beating my own birth at 9 months and 9 days after my parents' wedding. Boy, was he an ugly newborn baby. Later he would win the only two baby contests he was entered in by Aunt Sadie, the Boone County Fair and the fair in Centralia. He turned out to be a really beautiful baby boy. At some point in the fall of 1960 presidential election year, I was approached to run for the county clerk's position for Boone County. The sole reason for being approached was tied to the congressional race. The Democrat Congressman Morgan Mulder had paid his 17-year-old daughter $11,000 to work in his office. A well-thought-of minister, Bob Bartle, had been recruited to run against him, and they felt my name 1.0. might be of help in a close election. Stanley Ginn and his wife Rosemary, who was a Republican National Committee member, were the two who approached me. Both were the most prominent Republicans in Boone County, which had been historically solidly Democrat. I told them I did not have the money or time to campaign being in college, but they still thought I would add to the local ticket. I agreed, and I think we ran a few TV spots funded by the Ginns. Nixon was running against Kennedy for president. Bartle did lose in a very close election, and perhaps my name on the ballot may have helped to a small degree. Boone County remained Democrat-oriented. My fall season as a grad father coach went well, and I was intent on getting started. I formally graduated at mid-year, and my second semester was all dedicated to my master's degree in secondary school admin. I was fortunate that an opening became available at Hickman, and I would be an assistant to my head coach, Bob Roark, and to coach Jim McLeod, who had been my junior HS coach. I would teach American history and physical education. Salary, $4,800. During 1961, my parents experienced a real shock when their home was struck by lightning while they were at my grandfather's. By the time we all arrived at the house, the entire second floor was ablaze. My dad and I foolishly rushed into the house, and we saved three items: 1. My dad's business books, 2. my mom's tea cart, and 3. the family Bible on my dad's side, printed in Norwegian. The house burned to the ground. I lost most all of my personal items still stored at my parents' home, as Peg and I were in a small apt with little storage. Losing so much of our family history was very painful. The only thing standing among the ashes was my dad's water softener. When they built a new home next to their old house, that water softener was installed and worked. By this time my dad had bought out the local water softening business from the Wilkets, retaining the name, which included both Columbia and Fulton, MO. Mr. Wilkett still continued to be on the road selling large commercial water softening units. Fortunately for my parents, when they added a small addition to their home, they did increase the insurance to cover the addition, which did help on building their new home. They also decided to build a smaller home on the burned-out side for Peg, me and Doug to live in. It was later showcased in the Columbia Tribune, as modest as it was. But we were thrilled. That Christmas my mom gave us a Norwegian elk hound puppy. We named her Saben. In hindsight, with a new baby, we did not need a new puppy, but we had her 16 years and she was a super dog. At Hickman, I was thrilled to be assisting my old coach, and we had a really good team, finishing 8-2 on the year. In basketball, it became a Cinderella season as we went 28-1 and won the state championship in St. Louis over Kirkwood HS. It was the most fundamentally sound team I ever saw. Simply did not beat themselves. Very few turnovers per game. Hard to explain the absolute joy of winning a state championship, especially as an assistant to your former coach. I also was an assistant coach in baseball. Hickman in 61-62 had some really gifted athletes and really good kids. I was anxious to get a head coaching job even though Coach Rourke hinted that if I stayed I would likely follow him. I thought the world of him but did not want to stay awaiting his decision to retire. I applied for a couple jobs, one in Nebraska but got the head job in Higginsville, MO. Peg was now pregnant with son number two, and that summer before I started the Higginsville job I worked on my master's degree at Mizzou.